College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard Al Schock talk about it in CBS News. You heard it in his newscast. You've seen it on our station's website and social media channels. Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer who was convicted of murdering George Floyd, was stabbed Friday in a federal prison in Arizona. Minnesota's Attorney General Keith Ellison confirmed that. He prosecuted Chauvin in the Floyd case. He said that, you know, Chauvin is in stable condition as of today. And here's a quote from Ellison. I'm sad to hear that Derek Chauvin was a target of violence. He was duly convicted of his crimes. And like any incarcerated individual, he should be able to serve his sentence without fear of retaliation or violence. According to the Prison Bureau on Friday, an incarcerated individual was assaulted at the Federal Corrections Institute in Tucson at approximately 2:30. Responding employees initiated life-saving measures for one incarcerated individual. This is on the report. No employees were injured during the incident. The stabbing was first reported by the Associated Press and then the New York Times. Chauvin is at the medium security prison while serving two concurrent sentences in Floyd's murder. Now, listen, I've never been to prison. I don't know anything about prison. But if you are in prison, how is it that somebody gets stabbed? How is it that this person is there? There are guards there who are supposed to be making sure that everybody is in there, they're serving their time and they're safe. How does he get stabbed? How does contraband come in? Is it built? Are they making makeshift weapons in the jailhouse? Or is somebody sneaking stuff in? You know, these are the things that I don't know about because that's not my wheelhouse. But my brother-in-law, my sister in Houston, Audrey, her husband, Anthony Scott. Right now, he owns George's Catfish Kitchen in Houston. He's a restaurant owner. He has a successful restaurant. But before that, he spent 5 years as a prison guard. And I was like, you know what? I'm not tracking down no expert. I'm going to call my brother-in-law. So he is joining me on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Anthony Scott, welcome to the Shaletta Show.
All right. How you doing, Miss Shaletta?
Hey, brother-in-law. I thank you for taking a moment from your restaurant. I know you're so busy with customers and cooking and all the stuff that goes along with, you know, making sure that, you know, you've got a great restaurant and taking care of the people in Houston and feeding them real good. Some of that amazing seafood that you fry up. Oh, my God. If anybody is visiting Houston, make sure you put George's Catfish Kitchen on the list. It's in Humble, Texas, right outside of Houston. You will love it. Now, we're going to back this train up, brother-in-law, because for 5 years you were a guard at a prison. Talk to me about that position.
Well, it's a correction officer. I was a correction officer for TDCJ. That's the Texas Department of Corrections. And it's everything you think it is. Inmates get sentenced, and from that courtroom, they come to us. And they are housed there for the number of years that the judge has given them. And we clothe them, feed them, and put them to bed.
And, you know, you did that job, and I remember the stress and the strain and the wear and tear on you and your mental as well as physical, because you got to make sure that everybody is safe in there. And, you know, I remember you telling me one day it's just like we're serving this time with them, because we go to work and we see the same people every day. They see us every day. It's like we're in there with them serving that time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you've ever been to college or any type of just an everyday working job, you see those same people every day. You get to be friends with them. You talk about your life. They talk about theirs. Sometimes they talk about their crimes, you know.
And so now we are sitting here in Minneapolis where George Floyd was murdered. And we get this news that Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer who was convicted of murdering George Floyd, was stabbed on Friday in a prison. Now, yes. My first question is, do they bring the contraband in? Does somebody sneak it in? Do they make it? You know, in your years, 5 years as a prison guard for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, talk to me about this contraband and how it's making its way into the prison system. What have you seen in your experience?
Well, mostly they make it, but it's all of the above. People bring in stuff, drugs, contraband, weapons. When I was working as a correction officer, there was talk, not on my unit I was on, but somebody had brought in a gun, and that was nothing they made. An officer or these inmates have outside details, so sometimes people leave it on the side of the road or somewhere, and they'll, you know, pick it up. So there's all types of ways. And, of course, they make them as well. They take something as simple as a toothbrush and turn it into a weapon.
And that is scary. How are you, when you were a corrections officer, you know, you constantly have to not only keep other inmates safe, but also yourself as well.
Absolutely. I have been doing my time. You may not know this, but I've had an inmate pull a shank on me. That's what they called it, a prison-made knife. A shank on me, you know, while doing my rounds. I came around the corner, and I think I caught him doing something he wasn't supposed to be doing, and he had a shank with him, and he pulled it on me.
And what do you do? You didn't ever tell me this. Oh, my God, I'm sitting up here. My mouth is open.
Oh, yeah. It's just, I mean, I was down there for 5 years, and yeah, lost. Seen it all, done it all. So, yeah, I've had an inmate pull a shank on me. So I confronted him. I was terrified, but I didn't let him know that. Mm-hmm. And I talked him out of, told him to put that up in the softest words I can use on the radio. But
yeah,
so it was a stare down, and I won.
Now, when you are investigating something like that, how long does it take before you can kind of get to the bottom of it? Is it going to take months? Is it going to take weeks? Will we ever know kind of, you know, is it, you know, some kind of code of silence? You know, talk to me about the process after something like that happens that you went through when, you know, a weapon was found.
Well, the normal procedures, they'll probably shut what they call lock down the unit. And all that means all the inmates will be locked in their cell. There's no movement. And then they'll go through and they'll search every single cell in there for weapons. Mm-hmm. And they'll talk to the different inmates and try to find out, you know, what exactly happened and how it happened and so forth. And some inmates will talk and some won't.
Mm-hmm. So it's a process, you know, after this happens. So you're not going back to business as usual.
Oh, no. They're going to immediately lock it down. Anything, even less serious offense, maybe even a fight. But anytime there's drugs or weapons found, that's an automatic lockdown. They're going to find out because there could be more. So, yeah, this happened, but what about the rest of it? So we're going to find whatever's there, you know, at that time that we find something. We're going to open it up and do a full-scale investigation.
Well, I can't thank you enough for shining some light on what's next, shining some light on how, you know, a knife even gets into the jail, and, you know, what you as a prison correction officer, you know, kind of had to go through. I am just standing here with my mouth open. I'm so grateful to God that you did not get injured or hurt, that you were able to persuade, you know, that inmate to put that weapon up so that you could come home safely to my sister. Because Lord have mercy, I would not want to be anywhere near her if anything ever happened to you. That woman loved you more than anybody I've ever seen love anybody else in my life. So we cannot let anything happen to you.
Yes, ma'am. I agree.
All right. Well, you get back to your restaurant and tell my sister I said hello and I love her. And y'all say some catfish for me for when I come home for Christmas.
Absolutely. This was for you.
All right. And you all stick around. We've got more to come. It's just so frustrating. I remember when I decided I was not going to write a book about my son, Brandon. You know, ever since 2020, I've been writing children's books about my kids who have autism. I want to create awareness and acceptance for children who have special needs like mine. And, you know, I'm doing all things, anything I can do. I'm having job fairs for adults with autism. I'm speaking at different events. I'm, you know, going in and doing lunch and learns with corporations. And I'm also writing children's books because I know that I have to be able to speak to my children's normal developing friends. See, my children's books are not necessarily for kids with autism. They are to educate their normal developing friends about how to support them and to show them in a different light so that they can understand and know that this is a kid just like me. Maybe he just can't talk. This is a kid just like me. Maybe he just, you know, doesn't read as well. This is a kid just like me. He has a brother and a sister, and he has got mom and dad and grandparents, and he has similar experiences. And so when I wrote my daughter Cameron's autism book, folks loved it. It was amazing. Everybody lost their minds. And then Daniel's book came out, and same reaction. It was, people loved it. People loved the story of my son and how he learned to talk through music. Music educators and teachers all across the country were making sure that that book was stocked. McPhail lost their whole minds. Walker West School of Music lost their whole mind. And then it came time for Brandon's book to come out. And Brandon's a middle child, so he doesn't expect stuff, you know. Middle kids, they don't expect to get anything new. Everything's hand-me-down, and he's just, you know, low expectations. I love him. That's why he's my favorite kid. He doesn't give me any problems. And I told him, I said, Brandon, Mama's not going to do your book this year because the book banning people were out there screaming, and they were losing their minds. And they were snatching books off the shelf just because they have little black kids on the cover. And I intentionally make sure to put my entire family on the cover of our books so that kids can see this child has a mama and a daddy and siblings. This is not a hard luck story. This is not a historical young Dr. Martin Luther King or young Rosa Parks story. Brandon Brundage, Cameron Brundage, Daniel Brundage, they got stories, right? But I didn't want that fight. You know, we were coming off the heels of George Floyd. We were in COVID. I was worn out trying to build my business and still working. I was tired. And I told my son, Brandon, I said, we're not going to do your book because I don't want to fight these book banning people. We sell a lot of books in Texas, and that's where a lot of the books are getting banned. And so I don't want the struggle. I don't want the hassle. I don't want to be at the protest. I don't want to be speaking at the school board meeting. I know how it's going to go down. It's going to take a lot of mommy's time and energy and efforts away from our family. We've got some other stuff we're working on. So let's not do it this year. And my sweet little boy understood. And then he saw the Let's Go Brandon flag. He thought people were cheering for him. I went ahead and wrote the book anyway. And bam, we got another number one bestseller. But I still had to deal with the people, especially in light of it being inspired, not necessarily about, but being inspired by the Let's Go Brandon flag. There were people down in Florida and Texas that wanted to ban the book. And I had to speak to the school board. I had to speak to the churches. It did take the effort, right? And I thought, well, this is a Southern thing. Any self-respecting person is not going to try to ban children's books in Minnesota. I don't have to worry about that. That's a Florida and a Texas and Louisiana thing. I'll deal with that when it happens, right? So today, in your Star Tribune, St. Cloud Library System tackles record number of requests to ban and move books. So much so that Jenny Berg had to write a story about how the board approved an updated policy after challenges over quote-unquote obscene books. An unprecedented number of requests just this year to move books, to ban books. It's just frustrating. We don't want to say anything about the guns. We don't want to do anything about violence. We don't want to do anything about hate speech. We don't want to do anything about racism and social injustice. But we want to get over here and banning children's books. Really? Won't have anything else to do with our time? If you don't want your child to read my book, that's fine. Don't buy it. If they come home with it, send it back to the school. Send a note to the teacher and say, hey, you know what? I don't want this book. If this book is read in my child's classroom, can you send them to the office, to the library, out on an errand, something, give them some headphones, let them watch Go Noodle. It is already hard enough for librarians and schools to do their jobs. They've got to take care of our kids. They've got to protect our kids from bad actors. They've got to make sure that they have enough space, that everybody is getting the food they need, the nourishment, the love they need. And then here you come, mad about a list of books, and now you want to cause trouble, cause drama, stir up confusion at school board meetings because you want to ban books. And it's always the loud voices that get the attention. And so I'm reading this story and I'm so frustrated because I'm getting ready to write Andrew's book. Andrew Does His Dance. Just, I swear to you, just this morning, I wasn't even going to talk about it yet, but just this morning, signed the contract with the publisher for Andrew's book. Coming out April 1st in honor of Autism Awareness Month. A book about how to make sure to support normal developing kids who have siblings with autism. Now, I ought to be able to put that book out with my son, who's co-author because he's 17, and not have to worry about somebody with a sign up that says God's children are not for sale and want to ban it just because there's a black family on the cover or just because they don't believe that autism is real. Or because I got vaccinated and they're still angry about it. You know, of all the things that we can be making right, you know how much effort and energy it takes to just cut up and act a fool for no reason? There's a lot of stuff that we need to fix in our community. There's a lot of work to be done. We still got redlining going on. There are children in our community who are underserved. We got whole neighborhoods with no grocery stores. There's a lot of abuse and neglect. It's getting cold. Our homeless people need somewhere to stay. You got kids going to school with no gloves on because their parents can't afford it. There's a lot of initiatives and things that you can take up if you got that kind of time on your hands. But instead, you want to sit in a school board meeting in St. Cloud to ban books that you deem inappropriate, challenging them. And listen, don't get me wrong. There's some books out there that I wouldn't let my kids read. We've gone into movie theaters to watch movies. And when we get in there, I say, you know what? This is not age appropriate. Let's go. Let's get a refund. Let's go see something else. There are books available. And if they come home with something and it's not appropriate, we're going to send a note back home to the teacher. Because you know what? I'm not going to inflict my values on you and your family. Because what your children might be mature enough to handle, my kids can't handle. So I'm just going to let the teacher know that this is not appropriate for my kids. But I'm not going to tell this librarian, whose job it is to curate books and provide reading options for children, that they need to ban a book because I don't like it, because I think it's inappropriate. I don't want my kids watching it. I'm not your kid's mama. And guess what? You're not my kid's daddy. And a lot of times the people who are banning books don't even have kids at all. Not in their school district. They have no stake in it. So if you got no skin in the game, get your flyer, get your poster, get up out of that school board meeting and let these librarians do their job. We'll be right back. Tuba, I know you ain't sitting over there with your book. I need the book. Give me the book. Give me the Tuba sitting over there looking. You know the book. I'm just getting the book. I love the book. I'm so excited for you. Okay, first of all, I'm sorry. Let's back up, because anytime I see another author putting out a children's book or doing something amazing, I have to have them on a show and help them amplify their message. And Tuba Nguyen has this beautiful, amazingly illustrated children's book. She is joining me now, not on the phone, but actually in studio. And there's nothing better for me than holding a new book. Let me tell you something, Tuba. This is something I heard, okay? I'm bless you with this.
Tell me.
This is a nugget. Success is not a dollar amount. Success is when you can take something that is inside of your head and put it in front of your face. And I'm shaking right now, because you have taken the vision for your children's book from inside your head and you have put it in front of your face, and it is real, and I am holding it. How are you feeling about this right now?
Micheletta, my heart is like bursting, because what you just said is exactly what I tell my students, is that with this book, it has started in my mind, I felt it in my heart, and it came right out of my hands. And that is just such the somatic and like internal process and movement to help also with this like generational healing that I always amplify and talk about. That is like one of the like inspirations behind this book, and so many other nuances. So I just can't wait to share with you and with everyone else.
Okay.
In the Twin Cities area. Yeah.
It is My Daddy Tells Me by Tuba Nguyen, illustrated by Serena Lombardo. My friends Wise Inc. have put this book out. And tell me about My Daddy Tells Me.
So My Daddy Tells Me encompasses so many different emotional nuances in that family dynamic. But one of the biggest inspirations is truly having a special bond between a father and a daughter. And then the affirmations, right? So this children's book is about the father-daughter migrating from Vietnam to America, and he provides her with these positive affirmations every day throughout this transition to really help build her self-esteem and her self-confidence, but also in a way that's helping her preserve her cultural celebrations and traditions, but also adjusting into a new space in society. But together, and in that, growing their bond and strengthening it throughout time. So,
okay, is this you and your daddy?
This is semi-biographical. Yes, this is about me and my daddy.
Yes.
But you know, the healing part about this too is that so many of these affirmations were things that I didn't hear, things that I were just longing. I wish I had her hearing from my dad. And because it was something that I didn't have, I wanted to come from a space of healing and growth and repair, right? And not coming from a deficit space and saying, hey, look at what I didn't have. And putting this negative connotation around, you know, the dads and the absence and that. So this is to help inspire the next generation of that this matters, that your children need you to be there and give them those words of affirmation and build them up so they have this internal resilience of knowing exactly who they are, and they are loved and seen and respected for exactly the individual that they were born to be.
Okay, we're talking to Tuba Nguyen. Her new book, My Daddy Tells Me, is out now. And you talk about these affirmations and some of the positive things that the dad is telling the daughter. And I see the culture in this, speaking two languages, and cooking pho. You know, you have this all throughout this children's book.
Yes, it was extremely intentional for me to ensure that I also was to able highlight the biracial diaspora, growing up Vietnamese and Black, especially that my dad's history too, that he was, you know, quote, a product of the Vietnam War. My grandfather was an African-American soldier serving during the Vietnam War time, and after the fall of Saigon and the soldiers were pulled out of Vietnam, my dad and grandmother were left behind. And so growing up, his identity was was a Vietnamese man. And when we migrated to the U.S., blackness and culture and what our black identity meant wasn't a conversation we had. So this children's book was also that ode and that celebration of having multilingual and multicultural families and growing up and being able to identify and talk about that as well.
Now, where can we get this book? You ain't getting this one back. Okay, FYI. FYI, this is my book. I don't know what to tell you. You are not getting this book back.
It is Small Business Saturday, so thank you
yes.
for supporting me on this very special day. But yes, ma'am, it has been so joyous to have this celebration. This has been a grassroots initiative, so if you would like to support my children's book, you can go on my website and purchase it through me directly, mnchildrensbookauthor.com. Also, my children's book can be found around the Twin Cities in small local businesses. So Red Balloon, Strive Bookshop, the Minneapolis Institute of Art is in their bookstore, art shop. So lots of many other options. So go on my website and it's all listed there for you.
Okay, now you are doing something special. In addition to a brand new book that we are all going to go out and purchase for the kid in our lives for Christmas, a great stocking stuffer. You're hosting a book drive to collect books for little free libraries in Brooklyn Center in Minneapolis. How can folks get involved in that initiative?
This is a great initiative. So it is based on the Read in Color initiative from the Free Little Libraries. And a grouping of this goal is that we want to be able to diversify the children's books that our children that are migrating to Minnesota can receive and have access to. And so really seeing representation of themselves, but also characters that may have similar experiences as them and having those stories being told and in a way that is uplifting, right?
Yes.
And we don't, because we often have seen when our stories are being told by people outside of the culture, it can be twisted and turned and utilized in a different way. So this was really a special initiative from the Free Little Libraries. And so this is to benefit CAPI USA, a nonprofit organization locally here in the Twin Cities area, serving immigrant refugee families coming into the Twin Cities area.
Okay, I am donating 10 books, 10 of my children's books. So
wonderful.
I'm going to make sure to get over there. Give me your website again, because I want to make sure that anybody who wants this book, who wants to donate books to the initiative that you have going on, and you'll be doing that through December 6th,
correct,
knows how to get in touch with you before you get out of here, girl.
Yes.
So proud of you. So
thank
proud
you.
Of you and your girl. Just can I say, I just so excited and I love supporting other folks doing good stuff, and this is just such a beautiful book. I just love it, and I just have to take a minute to say how proud I am of you for this book and what you have done and how you have poured your heart and soul into it. And I'm telling you, I'm gonna buy this for all of my kids' teachers to put in their nooks, and also for the libraries out in Cottage Grove so they can have it at the schools and have it available for the kids. So I'm going to support you in any way I can, but I just want to make sure that everybody else get a chance too, girl. So tell me how they can get to you.
Thank you. Yes, community support has driven, it's just so central to this mission that I have. So please, if you'd like to support me, go on my website at mnchildrensbookauthor.com. There you can find ways to purchase my children's book and get active and contribute for this fantastic Read in Color initiative for the Free Little Libraries book drive. Thank you.
All right, Tuba Nguyen joining me on the Shaletta Show. Y'all don't go anywhere. Steve Thompson is going to be telling me what's going on in this Minnesota-Wisconsin game. 6-0. Gophers up, baby. It's 2:50 and the Gophers are up 7-0 over Wisconsin. Steve, are we going to win this game? Come on, Steve. What you think, Steve?
It is early. It is early.
But we came up strong early, though. Look at us.
Well, here's the thing about all of it. You look at games earlier in the year against Northwestern, Illinois in particular really stands out. The game at Purdue, you just never know what's going to happen with this team. But I will say this, and I did bring it up Friday night sitting in for Henry Lake. If you have Floyd of Rosedale, the trophy if you beat Iowa,
mm-hmm,
and they retain the axe, and that's trophy if you beat Wisconsin.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a ton of job security for PJ Fleck.
Yes, it is.
If you win those two games.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get it done today and become bowl eligible, I think everyone will be sort of satisfied. The year could have been much better.
Yeah.
But win today is still good.
Okay. All right. Now, there's a lot going on with high school sports. You know, they were downtown. This is your time of year, Steve.
Yeah, it is. My final football game was in the semifinals at U.S. Bank Stadium. I really haven't had a role for prep bowl this year. In years past, we did the games, you know, we did maybe the big school game, the 6A game on the radio, but we don't do that anymore. But it really was a phenomenal 6A championship game, Centennial, and Edina went right down to the wire. Edina got a touchdown to pull within one, but they went for two and came up inches short.
Oh.
Centennial wins at 28-27. It was a great finish at Prep Bowl last night.
They were trending
good.
On social media. I was scared to look.
Yeah.
You know, when Edina's trending, you never know what to expect. So I was like, Edina's trending. I'm scared. And then I saw the clips and the game and the, you know, the video, and everybody was so excited. But, you know, this is just, you know, I know this is your most wonderful time of the year, but how was your Thanksgiving? What did y'all do?
It was good. Went over to my mom and dad's. My brother and his wife and his kids were there. And then a little bit later, my sister-in-law's mom and dad and her grandma came over. And so it was really a good day. It was a smaller group because typically we get together with my dad's side of the family,
yes,
which is a bigger group.
Yes.
But due to various circumstances, et cetera, it was a smaller crew on Thanksgiving. We watched little football, had a lot of good food, were able to hang out, shared some laughs. There weren't too many arguments, which was good. But yeah, all good. How about you?
We stayed close to home. Gotta say thank you for filling in for me last week when I was over here having those coughing fits.
Oh,
I wound up going to the ER. I think I sent you a picture of my toes. Did I see you a picture of my toes?
You did.
I was in the ER, I was like, look where I'm at, Steve. I'm in the ER.
Hopefully your toes are all right.
My toes are all right. That's all I could get. They had me strapped down to that thing and hooked up like bootleg cable. I had cords coming out of everything. But it's just that nasty cold. And I was in here having a coughing fit, and you were so kind to come in here and fill in for me. But I'm going to tell you, this thing is not trying to go away. It is like I'm sucking on lemons and hot tea and cough drops, and I'm still not at 100%. So, you know, I didn't want to get anybody sick. I didn't want to invite anybody over or take any invitations. So we just stayed at the house. So it was just me, Sean, and the kids. But I was telling Josh that Sean made some new thing called peach cobbler cups, because my kids always wind up sticking their fingers in the cobbler or scooping it out, and it messes it up. And so I said, I don't want them compromising my cobbler, because then they eat too many peaches and it's just crust left, or too much crust and there's number of peaches left. So he made individual cups, and I had planned on eating three of them until I saw Dolly Parton in the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders outfit. Steve, did you just about fall out when 77-year-old Dolly Parton was looking like $1 million in the cheerleader outfit?
I was surprised because I wasn't expecting it. We had football on, but we didn't let football dominate the day. But
okay.
In the halftime of that game, when Dolly came out, I had no idea in the lead up to the day that Dolly would be at the Cowboys Commanders game, the second game of the day. She is an amazing woman.
Yes, she is.
There was a documentary about her and her life and the impact and the songs she's written and all of the things she's done. She really is an amazing human being, and I was impressed. How can you not like Dolly Parton?
I don't know.
If she's amazing.
If you don't like Dolly Parton, I just block me.
She's amazing.
You know, let me know and just block me so that I don't try to call you. Because if you don't like Dolly Parton, I don't be your friend anymore. I mean,
but did you see that documentary about her and what a trailblazer she was and all the things she's done for all these causes? I mean, she's way ahead of her time.
Well, you always tell me about stuff that I don't know anything about. So now I'm going to have to go over and find it.
You've got to check it out. You'll be more impressed than ever. I mean, we know about her as an entertainer.
Right.
But just as a human being and her charitable causes, and she is so sensible and grounded. And beyond that, strikes me as just a wonderful human being. That makes it even more impressive.
Right, because those shorts she had on, I could not get them over my ankles. They would not make it past my knees. They would not. If I got them over my ankles, I couldn't get them past my knees. If somehow I got them over my knees, I surely would not be able to put that belt around it and zip them up. You know, there's no way I could have put that outfit together. And, you know, people say, well, she's had plastic surgery. You know, a lot of people have had plastic surgery. They still don't look that good.
Yeah.
What you got coming up?
It is incredible what she was able to pull off on a really big day. I mean, outside of Thanksgiving Day, the only other the biggest day in football is the Super Bowl. But I would say Thanksgiving Day is the second.
Runner up. Okay, what you got coming up on the show?
We got Doug. We'll do computers. We'll talk computer problems coming up between 3 and 4 today. We'll go outdoors with Steve Carney. We'll get an update on all things hockey with Jess Myers. Plus, college football galore. Huge rivalry weekend, Thanksgiving weekend. We'll have all the scores, some game reports. A couple local teams are in the playoffs as well, so that's coming up.
All right, y'all don't miss Steve. We'll see y'all next week.